All right, here we go. Welcome to Wake in the Future. I am Pat.
What's up, guys? I am Joel. Thank you for tuning in. I know it's been a while. I don't even know the date. It is
It's October 30th, bro.
Sunday, October 30th. So
Yeah,
tomorrow,
man.
Halloween, and we'll get all the Halloween. What a holiday, huh? And
Oh, yeah.
but yeah, it's been a while. It's been interesting. I'm down in Orlando right now and just kind of centrally located in Florida, meeting up with a lot of my wife's family. And it's funny, Pat, because the day before I left for vacation, my phone, it actually got stolen left, and it was such a blessing in disguise.
Right.
I never realized,
The blessing's really on my end, guys, because I don't have to hear from Joel at all while he's down there.
It's been better for everybody. Everybody likes me a whole lot more, but
Yeah.
it's great to be on. I feel like it's been months or years.
I know, right, dude? Well, it's funny. We decided you were going to open up, and literally, I did a little intro there, and I was getting ready to like jump right in because I've done a couple of records with some other people, and all of a sudden I'm like, shit, man, I don't know how to do this intro without Joel here.
Yeah, no, really cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody who's come on and kept Wake in the Future going for the week. It's great to see the community that we get, of just in individuals willing to come on and keep this thing rolling. And
Yeah, man, it's awesome.
I've said it a million times. This is nothing I could have foreseen, almost 3 year two about 2.5 years ago. When Pat and I started this, and it's great. And this vacation is what I needed. I got some real life stuff going on, so I needed to just do it up. Truly grateful to be able to do that, number one. And what I wanted to talk a little bit this morning, just a small outline into just to some things I've been rehashing, re going over. And that's the basically the forced government schooling that we have, the class-based society that it creates. And it's we could never get to the point where we're at without it, in my opinion. It eliminated the family structure, really the free thinking individual. It demolished. And it's kind of funny when you think about, you got the basic 13 years, kindergarten, and then the 12 years that most people go to. I still don't understand how anybody made it through 12 years of school. I made it through just enough until I was legally old enough to drop out with my parents' signature, which they were more than happy to sign. They were probably getting sick of the phone calls they were getting from me. And then the people that go on, they go on to this continued education. And I'm not saying, I'm not really going to bash college, but college students are kind of like vegans, within like 7 seconds of meeting them, like they're going to tell you that they're in college, what they're studying. It's like, dude, I just asked you how you were doing. I don't even know your name. Like, I
Right,
don't.
right. Well, it's interesting. I had a good chat, and it should be up by the time you guys are watching this one with Harmful last night. And he actually, he made a good point when it comes to college and, how he thinks, most people could benefit from taking even just one course in a semester per year or something like that, just to kind of it kind of to get you outside of the norm, get in there and start to read different materials and look at different materials and things like that. And it's a good point. I mean, for somebody like me, no way. The structure of that is something. Well, and given the time in my life and the amount of time available to me, but it is a good point, and I think he is correct on that, where a lot of people could benefit from certain taking a certain class of sorts, because it would get you outside. Because a lot of people, the reality is, Joel, is not the majority of people are not as self-motivating As a lot of you guys watching us today, I mean, a lot of our viewers, very self-motivating. You guys are out there finding more and more content to absorb and more research to do. But the masses of people, they're just not doing those things, you know?
Well, that's what I found. Really the only major problem I have with a majority of people that go to college is they think it is you see that class-based thing that they want. They think that, it kind of reminds me of the scene in Good Will Hunting with the dude with the ponytail in the bar.
Oh, like, yeah.
People think that because they're in college, that they're smarter than or smarter than anybody, or smarter than people on the whole, and you're exactly right. It's kind of crazy because what this schooling has created with technology is people that just don't care. They have no interest in reading, whereas people like myself and people viewing is like you don't have to send me to a classroom to tell me to pick up a book.
Right. That's what I mean, the self-motivation part, and really what's interesting too is for people like us and you guys watching, I mean, you can go out there, you can find curriculums online of these courses, and you can find the information. We're talking to you guys on the information right now. The web, the internet, whatever all, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, for all the evils that it has and all the bad that it can do, we can find the good inside of it, but let's stay more on point, Joel. So the education thing, starting in the 1800s really is when they started to work towards it, and into the early 1900s, which is, rolling in with, the big farmer takeover and all the rest of these things. But obviously the education system as a whole, they took over the pharmaceutical education, for doctors and all the rest, getting rid of the natural medicine, moving towards the, petroleum-based medicine. And at that time as well, they started heavily into the overall education system for, the average person, right? I mean, they go from the smaller community run schoolrooms where you might have somebody as young as 5 years old and somebody as old as 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, all in the same room, top down teaching kind of, you'll have the older students helping out the younger and so forth down the road, with the teacher at the front, kind of guiding everything through. And they realized really quickly that they needed to change that, and they started realizing that way back, and they started to work towards that into the early 1900s. And the biggest obstacle, as with anything, right? So with the Federal Reserve, with taxation, with all these things that we've seen come and go, some of them, a lot of them stay. They needed to get the population on board, and they have to find a way to propagandize them into believing that this is what they needed.
Yeah, it took, and as we'll go over with a few things, it saw a lot of resistance in the beginning. The forced schooling coincided with really with the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and the Industrial Revolution, where we need, they needed a lot of factory workers. And there's not anybody who has ever attempted to work at a factory. You can't really have free thinking go-getters working at a factory. It's very boring, it's very laborious, it's very I remember I got a job one summer, I got laid off, and at Classic Envelope down to and I lasted like 7 minutes. I'm like,
you told me this once.
You expect me to stand here for 8 hours, count 50 envelopes, put a rubber band around them, and put them into a box? This is
my existence.
Bye.
Yeah. But you're right, though. They needed a way to get people to stop thinking and just doing. One of the things, so Joel had sent me over an article. It was pretty pretty darn good. It's forestschool.com. And it's the third of three articles that this person wrote. And he takes a couple of quotes. One of the quotes from E.C. Cubberly, from his classic book, Public Education in the United States. It was originally published in 1934. And I just wanted to read this real quick, Joel, kind of to set, you know, the baseline for the remainder of this chat. With many of the older citizens, no progress could be made. The effective work everywhere had to be done with the younger men of the time. It was the work of many years to convince the masses of the people that the scheme of state schools was not only practicable, but also the best and most economical means for giving their children the benefits of an education. He describes how propaganda societies were organized to build up a sentiment for public education in the 1830s and the 1840s. For this work of propaganda, hundreds of school societies, lyceums, and educational associations were organized, many conventions were held, and resolutions favoring state schools were adopted. Many letters and addresses to the public were written and published. Public-spirited citizens traveled over the country, making addresses to the people, explaining the advantages of free state schools. Many public-spirited men gave their best years of their lives to the state school propaganda, and many governors sent communications on the subject to legislatures not yet convinced as to the desirability of state action. At each meeting of the legislatures for years, a deluge of resolutions, memorials, and petitions for and against free schools met the members. A lot of work.
They have it. You know, anytime that you need, you know, anytime you need propaganda like this, anytime you need governors, anytime you need people traveling the country, really things that are really good for society don't have to be hard sold like this. And you're talking about a time in much earlier in American history where free thinking and, you know, that there was a spirit of independence and, you know, but it, and, you know, Barnstable, the town of Barnstable here up in, Massachusetts, where we're from, Pat, it was some of the biggest resistance. And you know, you expect me to take my child and drop him off in the care of somebody else, like over my dead body, like literally, like parents were going into schools and removing their kids. You know, there were kids starting basically, you know, just short of a riot in schools, and the parents were right there. You know, they were on board with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we start to look at this and you start to see any resemblance of democracy gone, this is where it, you know, the United States was United States from about, you know, 1779 to mid 1800s. And then from there, it just goes downhill. And this is, you know, and what they were creating is you know what we have today. It's amazing what we see, and you know, and even as we go later, excuse me, it's going to take me a minute to find it here.
Sure.
I'm working off of my wife's cell phone and a lap and an iPad. I feel kind of like I feel like Ken Wheeler over on YouTube. Weird.
Well,
but you know, sorry. So we going on, we have the propaganda starting, and it's, you know, what is their goal? What are they trying to create for people? And you know, so let's fast forward to 1944, and we always talk about this utopia, you know, this fantasy that they're always trying to, that they think they can create, right?
Right.
They think this is their job. You know, they're going to create the perfect society, which never works. And, you know, there's a great section of the underground history of American education that goes into it with great references. You know, but when we talk about modern times and Gatto, he explains in one chapter, he's talking about Edward Weeks, Charles Beard, and John Dewey, all huge players, as is, you know, the guy, it's escaping me now, the guy you just mentioned, Pat, he was huge.
Coverly.
And rolling out this just Prussian model, you know, look it up. And, you know, it even goes further back than that, but really the Prussians perfected it. This is where all the, you know, in the 20th century, all of these people were sent over to Germany to go to their universities. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing. But
it's interesting as well, Joel. I mean, because part of the Prussian model being the compulsory attendance and things of that nature. And, you know, I experienced it myself as I got to the point where I left high school and kind of went on and did my thing, was I actually had police chasing me down because I was not going to school. And, you know, that's part of the model is you will be there. You are required to be there, because anybody who would not go to school, well, they're enemy of the state, right? You are now working against everything. And this is why, you know, the federal government continues to and has works so hard to make sure that all homeschooling models follow a certain curriculum. And they'll actually send people in to check on these homeschooling groups and all these other things. And, you know, this idea that, you know, all of a sudden I'm just going to remove my child. And yeah, you get them in homeschooling, but I'm saying like true homeschooling where you keep them in your home and they're not, this is something that the state views as, you know, it makes you an enemy of them because you're not doing what you're supposed to do, what every good citizen should be doing.
And that's the one bump in the road, actually, Pat, that they've seen in the United States. If you go over the truancy offices, mm-hmm. and
yeah, the truancy, that was the word I couldn't think of.
They didn't miss anybody. I had the same attendance as Pat. If
not, what attendance?
If not, I never dealt with the police. So yeah, that's the thing that they have said is like that over here in the States, their focus on truancy is nothing compared to what it was over in Europe. But, you know, I just want to, so in 1944, Edward Weeks, Charles Beard, John Dewey, as I said, all huge players in this. And they stated that, Bellamy's Looking Backwards book is the second most influential books of modern times, behind only Das Kapital by Mr. Marx. And yeah, the third was Uncle Tom's Cabin. So, mm-hmm. and so within three years of this, 165 Bellamy clubs opened up, right? And these were these utopian or Orwellian type societies that never worked, by the way. And within 12 years, okay, 46 other utopian books became bestsellers, right? And Looking Backwards, great book. You know, when we hear utopian or dystopia or you know, it's that's what they're doing. Yeah. They literally think, and then wherever you see these societies opening up, right, it's just, it doesn't work,
right?
You know, it's like, well, almost socialism kind of sounds good on paper, like everybody
we need to look at you know, how they're able to you know, go from the majority of people opposing this type of an education system to, you know, propagandizing them, like I said in reading those couple of paragraphs there.
Yeah.
Propagandizing them to understanding that, oh, you know, we do need this. All of a sudden you start to get this flip. And then from there, they're able to start to institute the different legislations that they're going to need, things like the compulsory attendance. So real quick, out of the same book from Coverly, the history of compulsory attendance legislation in the States has been much the same everywhere. And everywhere laws have been enacted only after overcoming strenuous opposition. At first, the laws were optional in character and not infrequently required acceptance by vote of the cities or counties concerned before becoming effective. Later, the law was made statewide in application, but the compulsory period each year was short, 10 to 12 weeks, and the age limits low, 9 to 12 years. After the struggle came to extend the time, often little by little, no surprise there, to include the entire period during which schools are in session, and then to extend the age limits downward to 8 and 7 and upward to 14, 15, or 16 to make the law apply to children attending private and parochial schools as well as the public schools. And this is exactly how they, when we look, you know, this is how they do everything with legislation of all sorts, right? And we're witnessing it happen right now with all of the vaccine talk that goes on everywhere. You know, just use the COVID one, obviously, because that's the big one right now, is, you know, they broke it into these these age brackets. They break it into the segments of society. Well, the highly, you know, the people that are likely to contract a non-existent virus. And then they start to break it down. And now here we are, all of a sudden we live in a day and age where now it's like, oh, 6 months is cool, you know, and it'll quickly become part of the childhood schedule. Well, they did the same thing with education. They needed to start slow and say, you know, we're not going to require a whole lot, but we do need to require some because we need to get the structure in place. And then from there, they can just run roughshod and continue to grow the age brackets, grow the time requirements. And then all of a sudden we live now today where, you know, we actually have people that, instead of recognizing the entirety of the education system, the government run segments of it, instead of recognizing that that is truly just a problem, there is no solution there. So they're going to go and fight to say, oh, well, if we run the, you know, these parts of it, then things will be okay. If we do this, if we do that. But really, it's at the top, the federal government controlling it. There is no taking it back until we can remove the federal government completely from education, until we can remove the state and local governments from the equations.
It's... And there you said it, and it's a great illustration of, you know, Big Daddy government. Like, no, you don't understand. We're doing this. We're going to do it. You can fight, you can rebel, but we're patient. We have more resources than you, and we understand that it might take some time, but we're not going to back up. And how else did they do it? How else? And how does all of this stuff tie in with where we're at today? And if you look at children's books and colleges and all of that, like children's books in the late 18th century and into the 19th and 20th century, obviously, you know, whereas pre-19th century really focused on family, working. Like, look at these fucking college kids. Like, some of these kids are 25, 26, 27. You never got their hands dirty in their life. And I'm talking about maybe like a 40-hour work week. I'm talking about trapped in their room, not even mowing, like, doing basic life.
Yeah.
And, you know, that and for me, I know, like growing up, like, it was... I was always working, you know, 8, 9 years old. Like, my father's throwing wrenches at me when he's fixing the car. Yeah. And, you know, I was out mowing the lawn. And like, that was part of the design. Like, keep these children as long as possible in a school being indoctrinated.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And one thing I do want to say as to what I was just saying, where, you know, we need to recognize the problem. Now, I'm, you know, I need to also make this statement as well. Is so with a lot of what we see happening out there, there are a lot of people out there fighting to get control of the school boards and the councils, right? I'm not saying that is, you know, not going to help at all, right? So don't get me wrong there, guys. You know, I mean, of course, if we can get like-minded people involved in these school boards to where they can maybe start to at least remove some of the disgusting content, some of these disgusting books that we see being put into our schools where our young children are able to access them. All of this insane talk about all the, you know, sexuality and all this disgusting shit that does not belong anywhere in schools. I can see it makes good progress to a degree. But ultimately, what we're discussing here, guys, is more the curriculums that are passed down from the federal government that are made up by these giant think groups that literally are being paid, you know, to dumb us down completely and purposefully. And that's where, you know, we run into the major problem. So it's kind of like, you know, the analogy in talking with Harmful Content last night was, you know, if we're floating down a river, you know, we can try to swim upstream, not see the progress we're making, or we can kind of go with the current and at least find some rocks or branches to grab a hold of along the way. And that's where he kind of used for his religious exemption that we talked about. And it's a good analogy because at least then we can see where we're going. We can find those things to grab hold of. And that would be like taking control of the boards, things of that nature. But ultimately, for the big solutions to be made, you know, we have to recognize the government issue and how they are literally, I mean, the entire system is designed, you know, to give us the illusions, to give us all of these things that, you know, truly don't make anybody, you know, really better off.
You know,
very few people, I'll say.
That's cool. That's everybody's personal decision.
Right.
You know, I was, you know, I had thought about the one time we had talked to him when we didn't record. And
dude, I'm pissed we didn't record that too, by the way.
they're doing stuff in my part-time job where like weekly testing might have to come up, and I thought about the exemption, and then I'm like, no. And I told the guy I work for, I said, if that happens, like my last day will be the day where I'm required to do that. You know, that's everybody's personal decision. But my stance morally, when I have to make my decision, it's fuck you. No.
Yeah.
I'm not using a religious exemption, period.
Yeah. And that's your decision.
I don't
want, you know, that's
want to wear Joel and religion in the same sentence. where I stand with that.
Yeah.
It's like everybody else's personal. It's everybody else's personal decision. Yeah. I'm down with that. With whatever people want to do.
Right.
But is you know, the arrogance and the fighting that it causes when somebody has a different point of view,
right?
And that's the other thing that school has been very good at creating. Mm. I've been very good at like getting people to maybe see things my way a little bit more by being genuine and not calling them fucking morons. And look at
you mean insulting somebody wasn't getting you anywhere?
Like, this works much better. I see what you're saying, but why don't you look at things this way? That works a lot better than you are an idiot and a sheep. And like there's so many people on, so many people that listen to us, Pat, that like, I just want to learn from them.
Yeah.
But I can't because they're arrogant assholes.
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, you know, Tony and Harmful both being good examples of that, you know, they don't see eye to eye together, but, you know, individually having them on the show and chatting with them, you know, keeps my mind open. I'm always willing to listen to points of view, and, you know, they both come off in comments and in general as assholes. But, you know, once you start to have that conversation and break down those barriers of, you know, no more keyboards, no more nothing, it's face-to-face chat. Oh, it's great convo, you know?
George Carlin had a great quote. He said, I love, and this is, you know, this isn't verbatim, but he said, I love people individually. Yeah. It's once you get people in groups of two or three of that I can't stand them.
Yeah.
Once there's a, you know, especially with us in like the comment section where it's a keyboard setting and there's none of that reality, which is face-to-face conversation, things get twisted. And what I found is a multitude of guests that I thought was going to go horribly. Now I understand that when I get somebody one-on-one, I'm going to get the actual person.
Yep.
I'm not at the ego-based keyboardist, right?
Yes.
And
that's the thing, you know?
And that's how it is out in reality in the real world, too, is like basic people on a fundamental level, one-on-one, are decent human beings. It's, you know.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and ultimately, to get back on point real quick with the education system, you know, one of the ways that the article that we're kind of pulling some quotes from, guys, obviously will be in the show notes. But the final paragraph of this, and it's a really good read. It's not very long at all, guys. The final paragraph on this one here, as we survey the current system of government-controlled schooling, we can safely say that the system has largely succeeded in achieving the original objectives, right? The fact that so few people question the model and those who do are viewed as dangerous heretics demonstrates the system's effectiveness. And that's the world that we live in. And it's the same way when you look at most of the hot button topics out there today. All right. You're either with it or you're against it. And if you're against it, you're a domestic terrorist, or you're a anti-science, or you're whatever, you know, the words that they will put on you, the labels that they'll put on you. And when it comes to the education system, the most important part about the government maintaining the control over the education system is that they can continue to mold every single person that attends it in the way that they need them molded, which is, for now, you know, obedient servants going out there, getting their, you know, their required education, and then going out there and getting their job that they're going to live in for the rest of their lives. And then you get people like all of us guys, you guys watching, Joel and myself, who saw through that and see through that. Most of us, at least at very young ages, some of us as we grow older, you know, and I can speak for myself on this, and Joel, I think I can speak for you on this. Most of us, we don't stay in the same career, the same job for our entire lives. We're not able to stay in that one place and be okay with being stagnant. We need to enhance ourselves. A lot of us being very hands-on. Some know, but you know, a lot of us being very hands-on people, where we need to get out there and experience these things. This is what their system does not want. And why we're called things like heretics for it, because
up until this compulsory schooling, people understood that the best form of education was working, doing things, right? Yeah. Like, you can read all the books and like, what, look at what they have done. Yeah. 200 years, you went from 10-year-olds that were able to read Shakespeare, do geometry, do algebra, do all of these things. And here it is right here, right? Now, right above where you read, Pat.
Now they can't even spell their own name.
Scientific management of children would produce citizens that would be happy to stay in their assigned stations in life, were obedient to the state and other authority figures, having uniformity in thought for social order, and free from superstitions of the past. This required separating children from their parents for as much time as possible and placed under the supervisions of the state's ostensible experts in their methodologies.
Yeah. And, right. And help me on this. Maybe you'll remember. If not, guys, in the comments, get them young. Who said that? We need to get them young. Right? And that's exactly what they've done.
Yeah.
You know, they've managed that. And not only do they get them young, they're voluntarily handed over. And, you know, very few people out there are, you know, able to say, no, I never did that. And, you know, I still struggle. I struggle with my ex-wife all the time, because, you know, with my daughter. So what I've been forced to do in my life with my daughter's, you know, education is help her on my own. when she is with me, she is learning different things. I am teaching her and giving her different books. She loves reading now, which is freaking awesome, man. So I'm giving her books to read. You know, I'm going over information with her that I have learned and come across, and we have great conversations. We spend a fair amount of time together just driving, going to and from Kung Fu classes and different places that we go. And that's what we do. We don't listen to the radio. We talk while we're driving. And that's the way that I'm, you know, kind of pushed to have to do it, because I can't get the ex-wife to get past that. I mean, hell, you know, I tried, but, you know, and I continue to try, but it's a difficult challenge for me.
Which is exactly, I mean, it's, you know.
And so I have to settle for the next best thing.
It's that elimination from your family that they had to get kids away from their parents, right? Yeah. And why do you think the children always go with the mothers? Because throughout history, it's mothers that are more likely to go along.
Yeah.
They disagree. And that's not a sexist statement, that's reality. Oh, that's basic psychology. Yeah. It's like psychology, what do they fucking call it? 101.
I think you're both sexist and a bigot now, Joel. Damn you. And but no, like, you know, that's it.
It's funny too. It just reminds me of a quick story of my daughter coming home one time from school, and she was probably in like the second or third grade, and she came home and she said something, we were eating dinner, and she said something. I asked her what she learned in school today, and she and I'm in the same situation as Pat, and she said, "We learned about how we have rights." I said, "Who has rights?" She goes, "Children." I go, "You have
children.
One right. You have one right, and that is to listen to me." Yeah. Okay, that's your rights. You get rights when you turn a certain age, or
you know. But is that really the truth?
That's what they do. Yeah. That's. And that's like, and then you go deeper into the adoption laws and just exactly what they did and how we got that. But I just want to do a quick overview of, you know, where we got to today. I'm sure we'll have.
We're going to keep going on this one, guys. You know, the getting to the bottom of the whole education and all of the way that they're able to use it to their advantage. It's just like with the cell phones. It's just like with the televisions. It's just like with everything going on. They weaponize these things. They're able to use them to their advantage. And the single gain that's apparent in all of the different topics is control, right? Some cases financial gain, but mostly it's control. It's about being able to control populations. It's about being able to control people, mold them, and push them in a direction that you need them to go in order to keep them down, to keep them under the boot, or whatever term you want to use to describe it. Because ultimately, a society, millions and millions and millions of people, a free thinking people, able to act and do on their own, is unacceptable. We cannot have that. And there are so many people out there that are like, yeah, well, you know, there's too many people out there. They're just too stupid anyways. And, you know, or there's too many evil people out there looking to do bad and all. Okay, great. You know, there are those people out there, you know, but with a society filled with free thinking people willing and able to do things on their own for themselves and those around them.
Which is, you know, which goes back into where we have to start. We have to start at where all of this starts, and this starts, and these people are just they're really their victims to the system. This at 5 year olds going to kindergarten, and I think more focus on that and less focus on whatever hot, you know, insert a hot button topic here is if waking the future is going to do anything, and, you know, this stuff needs to get out there. And, you know, I've got some ideas of propaganda myself, you know, just, you know, it's not that expensive to make 1,000 pamphlets. I live right outside Boston, start dropping these bad boys all over college campuses and, you know, see if I can't make the news myself.
Right. Well, I'll say this in closing for me, Joel. So guys, we do appreciate you guys all. We love you guys. You guys are awesome. And you know, it's been interesting this past week with Joel gone, a couple of guests. Tomorrow morning, I've got another, you know, guest coming back on a second time, with it being Halloween. I think it'll be an interesting conversation that he wants to have. Hey, you know, whatever, man.
Simple minded.
Well, hey, you know, it's awesome. He's a good thinker, actually. Yeah, Adam, I really liked having him on the last time we had him on. And, you know, I've also got this coming Wednesday, it was rescheduled, an interview with somebody completely different that our friend Kevin Tuttle set us up with. You know, that'll be something I don't think that we've really talked about much, which will be fun. You know, it's going to be an interesting conversation. And ultimately, guys, you know, what you're starting to see happen here is, you know, Joel and I kind of pride ourselves on being very open-minded and willing to listen to other people's views and opinions on things, and kind of try to interject where we can and hear people out, because it's, to me, it's very important. Everybody has a voice, and, you know, not everybody's going to be correct. Not everybody's going to talk about things that are interesting, but, you know, we want to give you guys the ability to, you know, share your thoughts, share your voice. And if you are somebody that wants to do that, please email us, wakingthefutureofprotonmail.com. It is going to be the first link in the show notes. We always keep it that way these days, because we do want to hear from you guys. So, you know, anybody who wants to come on and have a chat, you know, you set it up how you want to talk, what you want to talk about, and we'll get you on. It'll be a good conversation, man. I know, Will. It always is.
And we're not going to argue. Do it. Disagree. You know, I've never once agreed with anybody that came on the show, and I don't think anybody that's come on the show or listened to me agrees 100% with me. But that's part of the beauty of it. Yeah. But when we're able to step back and be open minded and maybe not agree with what somebody says, it gives us the opportunity to look at things from a different angle. It gives us the opportunity to read something else or watch something else or do something. And that's the beauty of it. And that's what we're missing. So many of us wrapped up in our ego that my way is the right way and you must research this. And this is how it is because I fucking said so. And that's why I don't go over. That's why I don't go over to the comments on BitChute often, because it's just, it's a bunch of people with a monopoly on the truth. Yet here we are further and further and further down the river. So that's why I'm always looking for something new, something that might work, something that might help us move forward, because too many chiefs, not enough Indians, guys.
Thank you. I love it.
Please, guys, don't take Pat's word for it. Definitely do not take my word for it. Do your own research, come to your own conclusions and your own truth. Remember, guys, freedom starts at home and from within. Ladies.